Thanks for being with us today. This is Indira Lakshmanan. Taser International, now called Axon Enterprise, marketed their stun gun in the 1990s as a safe, non-lethal alternative for law enforcement. They changed the term to less lethal in 2006, though the company maintains the taser is almost never the cause of death. But a new investigation by Reuters found 1,005 deaths in the U.S. of people struck by tasers, nearly all of them since 2000. In 9 out of 10 cases, the victim was unarmed. Peter Eisler, a national affairs correspondent at Reuters, was one of the authors of that study, and he's with me now. Peter, tell us the main findings of your investigation.
Well, we identified a bit over 1,000 instances in which someone died after being stunned with police by a taser. And as you mentioned, Taser has always sort of dismissed these sort of findings, saying that the taser itself is never responsible for the death, that it's always other force that was used in combination with the taser or some underlying condition. We were able to get autopsy results for more than 700 of the cases that we looked at, that we identified, and in at least 153 of those cases, medical examiners listed the taser as either a cause or a contributing factor in the death. The second step of what we did was we looked at what the litigation burden has been associated with these weapons. And we identified close to 450 wrongful death suits that had been filed against police departments and municipalities in these fatal incidents where tasers were used. And in about 60% of those cases, the municipality or the police department ended up having to pay out either in a settlement or to satisfy a judgment. So there was a significant litigation burden attached to these deaths.
All right. So, Peter, in the cases you found where people died, we hear about the taser in the news when it's used on children, people with mental illness, or the elderly. In your findings, was there something that linked the people who died when the taser was used on them?
What we found was really, you know, some of the most vulnerable people in society were disproportionately affected by this, particularly people who were suffering mental health breakdowns or neurological problems like seizures. About 25% of all the deaths that we looked at were people who would fall into this category.
And so is the question that police officers are not being trained how to use these weapons properly? Are they using them like loaded guns?
Well, we certainly found plenty of lawsuits alleging problems with the training on these things. And as tasers have come more and more into force over the years, there has been an evolution both in the recognition of the risks that are attached to these weapons and also in the way that police officers are trained in them. So early on, tasers really were seen as kind of a harmless go-to weapon that you could use in virtually any circumstance. And nowadays, there's a broader recognition that there are risks associated with these things. There are certainly vulnerable populations. You're not supposed to use tasers on people who are elderly or people who are young or people who are frail or women who may be pregnant or people who are suffering from a mental health crisis. And as awareness of these restrictions, of these warnings has grown, the use of tasers has in many police departments diminished. You do see patterns in many departments that we looked at where the number of deployments of tasers year in and year out has been in decline.
Well, you know, the taser was initially adopted by police forces across America as supposedly a life-saving tool for police, but you write in your report that Taser has added so many warnings to protect the company from litigation that, in fact, there is something like an 18-page manual that would put the police officer completely at fault with so many guidelines that there almost seem to be no instances in which a taser should be used at all.
The warnings associated with tasers have gone from, you know, in the 90s when their first weapons were introduced, there were just a few warnings, and they were basically all related to a taser called secondary injuries. So when you're stunned with a taser and in sort of the conventional mode, two barbed darts come out of the weapon and they stick into you and they're connected back to the weapon by thin wires, and a pulsed current passes between the two barbs and causes a sort of a neuromuscular response. You lock up. You are literally physically paralyzed for a number of seconds. So as you might imagine, if you stun someone who is running or who is standing on an elevated platform, that person can fall. They can't put their hands out to block the fall, so you see a lot of head injuries. So early on, Taser's warnings were really geared towards those sorts of injuries. Don't fire a taser at someone who's standing on an elevated platform or who's standing in water. Those were really the main warnings. As sort of the science around tasers evolved over the years, and as litigation against the company mounted with more and more allegations that they were producing a dangerous weapon, the number of warnings that they put out grew from just those few paragraphs in the beginning to about eight full pages now, about 4,500 words of warnings, plus a 200-something slide user course that police officers have to go through. So there are the warnings and the things that you have to take into consideration when using these weapons have grown very, very complex. And we certainly interviewed many police officers and reviewed a lot of court testimony from people saying, you know, that the warnings have become so expansive that it's become increasingly difficult to find opportunities where the taser is appropriate and where you can use it in accordance with all of those restrictions.
Peter, despite all of these problems with lawsuits and the deaths associated with tasers, are the majority of police departments in the U.S. still using tasers?
Yes, certainly. You know, upwards of 90% of police departments in the U.S. are still issuing tasers. What they're really doing is just restricting their policies on when and how you can use the weapons.
Tell us, what could be done to reduce the number of fatalities, since, as you say, the vast majority of police departments are still using tasers?
Well, if you look at what, you know, some of these groups that look at policing and, you know, some of these think tanks have suggested, you know, it really is all about training and awareness. And particularly when you're getting in situations where you're dealing, for example, with someone who's having a mental health breakdown, a taser really should be seen as a last resort weapon. And what they're really emphasizing now is they're going back, in a way, to a time when police officers used talk and communication skills and took more time to try to control situations and sort of what they call de-escalate them so that you don't have to use a weapon. And if you do have to use a weapon, you know, taser has been pushed sort of deeper into what they call the use of force continuum, closer to, you know, where you might consider a firearm and further away from things like pepper spray and batons and stuff like that.
Peter Eisler, National Affairs Correspondent for Reuters, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.